Suzanne Tabbert here with the Cedar Mountain Herb School. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, Julie. Good morning, Susie. Thank you so much for having me on the program. What an opportunity.
You are just amazing. I got online and looked at your website. You're the director of herbal education at the school that has a campus here in Sandpoint, and you're also an author, speaker, adjunct professor at Bastyr University, guest blogger at Mountain Rose Herbs, and a member of Cal.
Hey!
Tell us a little bit about your journey here to Sandpoint and also broader to herbs.
Well, herbs started for me, Julie, when I was a little girl. I had an aunt who passed away 18 years ago, just shy of her 100th birthday. And she took me under her wing and taught me about plants. And she had such a passion for plants. And she would help me by showing me in her garden what her grandma, her mom, used for healing. And she passed that down to me. And then she'd take me in the house and show me her plants, how to water them, how to take care of them. And she would send me home with starts. And so from when I was a little girl, I always toddled down. She was about five houses away from my grandma. And I would toddle down and just have a good time with my Aunt Mary. And she taught me so much.
That's great. And tell us a little bit about your herb school. How long has that been in existence?
Oh, my goodness. This rendition has been around for about 35 years. And I come from, I just say, west of Spokane. Wink, wink, you know, we're that way west of Spokane, where I taught there for 35 years, taking people up into the mountains, to the rivers, to the beaches, and teaching them about the plants that grew there, how they can be used for medicine and food, how to make the remedies, when to harvest, what parts. So it's in my lifeblood. It always has been. It's been my passion. And I couldn't foresee doing anything else, to tell you the truth. I dabbled in music. I dabbled in so many things. But herbalism and taking people out to these most beautifully exquisite views and places has really just stuck with me. And it's something I've always loved.
That's great. So I'd like to start with, how do you define herbs? Define that for us.
Well, you know, an herb is something that is used for medicine or for food, right? And so it can be a weed. A dandelion is a weed, and people like to take that out of their garden. They go, the scourge of my garden is the dandelions, but there's so many healthful constituents in there. And so I look at plants a different way. And an herb can be a tree. It could be the resin of a tree. It could be the bark. It could be your yarrow in the wild. It can be your lavender in your garden. It's what it brings to us as humans for, you know, for food, mm-hmm, and for medicine.
Okay. And in you define yourself as a bioregional herbalist. Tell us what that means.
A bioregional herbalist, Julie, is one who uses the plants where they live. Right. And so here I am in North Idaho. And so I have knowledge of the plants that live here because even though I lived, you know, in the Seattle area for, 40 something years, there are plants that grow in Western Washington that grow here in North Idaho. There are plants that grow in Central Washington that grow here, too. And so, you know, it was like when I moved here, all my friends were already here. And there were a few plants that I got to meet and greet. And it's just a beautiful thing. And since I teach at Bastyr, you know, I'll teach in California and Oregon. I've taught, in Canada and Montana. And it's all, you know, these different bioregions have different plants. But for me, it's about working with the plants where you live locally, because they're adapted to the dirt, the air, the water here, right? And so if we use those plants, then we become more adapted and more grounded where we live. And that's such a beautiful thing.
So you don't use exotic herbs at all? You just use what you find in the region?
Absolutely.
In our Western region?
Yep. Yep. If I can't grow it here, or it doesn't grow here wild, I really don't need it, to tell you the truth. You know, if it, there are plants that are popular. You know, this year, this plant is going to be popular. Next year, it's going to be some other plant. And everybody goes to it and buys mass quantities of it. And they think that's going to be the plant that's going to cure all their ills. But they don't realize the impact that they may be having on the environment and the population in Chile or in Africa or wherever this plant is coming from. And if we're using the plants that grow locally, we're more bound to respect the plants here because we're very much tied into it.
It sounds like what I hear you saying is that here in this bioregion, there's enough. There's enough variety to cover all of the different things that we may need to help us be healthy and vibrant in our life.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So really learning about what's here is the first step?
Yes.
Possibly.
Yes.
Because we don't know. I remember walking out in the woods. I used to hike a lot. And seeing this plant with little yellow flowers, and you think, you know what I'm talking about. And it turns out it was St. John's wort, and that is incredibly medicinal.
Yes.
But it's everywhere. You think of it as, like you said, it could be a weed, a tree, or a cultivated herb of some sort of plant. But so that's what you're saying.
Yes. And, you know, it's funny you bring up St. John's wort because people in other realms we'll consider that an invasive weed and we just got to kill it. But it is so medicinal and it brings so much upliftingness to people who have problems, you know, maybe even this time of year when they may be depressed because of the lack of sun or what have you. It can be uplifting, right? Mm-hmm. So an herbalist and a bioregional herbalist will look at a plant a different way than maybe the person that's just hiking and sees it as a pretty flower.
Right. And then there's the whole idea behind, well, we'll take St. John's again. It is, as you say, you can ingest it. You have to learn how to do that, but it's also topical.
Yes.
You have to learn how to process that. And I was surprised at how that worked and how effective it was to have an oil with St. John's, this red oil that was unbelievable for sore joints from all those hiking adventures. And it really works. So there's the identifying, first of all, trusting and learning. So bioregional herbalist in our community. Hallelujah.
Thank you. Yeah. And one of my favorite things to do is take people out in the woods or, like I said, at the river, or at the lake and show them the plants. This identify the plants. This is the constituent. I'm a big science geek. So these are the constituents inside that are creating a physiological change in our own body. When do we harvest it? What parts do we harvest it? And what is the best menstruum, which means a liquid that will pull out the constituents that we're looking for to do, you know, the anodyne of the St. John's wort, to be able to pull that out. And oil is such a great menstruum for that. Mm-hmm. As you see, you know, it's a super red oil. The other thing that's important, though, is to pick the right part of the plant, because I hear people and on social media, they say, oh, you know, you cut off the very top of the plant and you stuff a jar. Well, there's more of the hypericin, which is that beautiful red, in the buds than there are in the open flowers or the leaves or in the stems. And so what I teach people is you pick the right part of the plant, and it's tedious picking one little St. John's wort bud at a time, but the result is super effective medicine. And I tell people, do you want to make kind of effective medicine, or do you want to make medicine that can help heal your family, your friends, your customers?
And that the education part of it is so important to you, obviously, that that's what you teach people.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that local connection, that you're rooted in your area, you're rooted in your land. I think that mm-hmm. is vital as well.
Yeah, because there is that respect that then is demanded, because if you take all of the plants from one area, you go back there and you go, oh, oops, I took all those plants, you know. But if somebody else does that in Chile, you don't see that. So you just think, ooh, I got this abundant plant. But here, you know, it's kind of, there's an accountability
sure.
that comes with it.
Sustainability mm-hmm. that you need to be aware of.
Absolutely.
On another thing on the website that I read, it says, there's a quote, let food be your medicine and may there always be medicine on your table.
So
speak to that for us.
thank you. You know, Julie, one of my mottos at my school is get the medicine to the people in the ways they'll enjoy taking so that healing can occur. You can have jars of teas on your, you know, on your shelves. You can have bottles of tinctures. But if someone doesn't want to use a tincture because of the alcohol, because they're in recovery, or it's against their moral code, religion, whatever it is, they can't use that, right? Or if they're used to drinking Mountain Dew, and they say, oh, this tea is bitter, this tastes weird, how are we going to get that medicine into them? You know, so I work a lot with herbs, adding them to food and to treats that are healthful. That, and one thing that I think is really important is to layer your medicine throughout the day. And for me, an herbal salt is medicine because it's not just the salt, right? It's the herbs that are in there. And sure, you're not going to get a whole lot of medicine out of, you know, your little bit of salt that you sprinkle on your fried eggs in the morning. But then you have a cup of tea, you have some honey that's been infused, right? And you're going to put that over, I don't, a piece of toast, which I call the universal transport of herbal medicine. and then, you know, you put herbs in your stew at night, you know, constantly having things available on the table. My husband, he's from Germany, and bread and beer are his two staples. And so I always have herbal honeys on the table for him, because if he's going to use honey anyways, might as well have some herbal honey. And his favorite is willow. We have lots of willow here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
I've heard that herbs and beer go well together. Put a little of that honey in the beer.
Yeah, there you go.
Is the willow the bark then? Because you see willow bark.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And so every May, I take people up near Clark Fork at a location that I'm not going to say unless you register for the class. And we literally I show them the plant. We stand in front of the plant. They take a little piece of the bark and they chew it and they taste what that tastes like. And then they learn about the constituents in there, what this medicine will bring. And then they get to harvest some willow and sit by the river and peel the bark. And it peels so easily in the spring. It's just so moist and juicy. The peel just comes off. And then they make a tincture. They make a honey. They can take some home to dry for making teas or an oil. So because it's such a wonderful pain reliever, willow. Oh, my gosh. It works so well. Better than some pharmaceuticals, in fact.
The other thing, to speak to all the food variations that you're talking about, you talk about herbal bitters.
You know, the standard American diet is what? Sugar and salt and processed foods. And what does that create in the body? It creates inflammation. And science says that chronic inflammation is really the starter kit for just about every disease there are. Right. And so if we can use herbal bitters, which is not the taste profile that most people are used to, again, getting it in ways they'll take it. People don't realize that chocolate is a bitter. Right. Who doesn't love a good piece of chocolate? And that chocolate has things in it that will bring down inflammation, which is amazing. You know, and bitters can do so much. It can help beyond taking down inflammation. It can stimulate digestion, helping the sluggish digestion work better, helping, you know, the elimination process, you know what I'm talking about, work a little mm-hmm. bit smoother, mm-hmm. you know, and it, bitters do so much for the body that Americans don't really realize. And so I teach my apprentices and I have herbal bitters workshops. In fact, this Saturday, I have an herbal bitters workshop available. And so I talk about all the wonderful things that bitters will do for the body. And let me tell you, once you start introducing bitters to the body goes, I want more of that. I feel good when you give me a little bit of that. Can you give me a little bit more? And since I want so much more, then I'm going to make it not taste so much bitter, right? And so people get used to then this bitter. Other cultures, bitter is just part of the
sure.
the deal. You know, in Greece, it's the salads,
yes.
you
yes.
know? And,
yes.
You know, in Japan, they're eating the bitter melon. It's just part of their daily diet.
Yes, so, I have a Greek friend who gets mad when I throw out my bolted lettuce because he calls that a bitter.
Yes.
And he says that's probably one of the best bitters.
Yes.
But bitters, how do you define bitters? I mean, is it like is it a taste that we're talking about or a process or?
It's a taste.
Okay.
Because we have bitter receptors on the outer part of our tongues. And so when we taste something that's bitter, that kind of gets into action and goes, woo, wow, you know? And so, and then it starts your salivation process. It starts, your liver starts producing bile to go through your gallbladder and into your small intestine to line up the fat so that the enzymes from the pancreas can more easily break them down into lipids. And those lipids then create hormones that we need to run every system in our body.
Just listening to you talk, it dawned on me that it's not just about understanding what's out there, understanding the properties of the herbs, their medicinal value, what they can do, but it becomes part of your lifestyle that you may change your approach to what you're doing, eliminating those potato chips at night with the movie, because you want health. Is this about health, possibly taking care of a chronic situation, but also setting yourself up for longevity and health? And so where in your school, the workshops that you do, does that come about? Or, and you talk about that, or learning about herbs, does it sort of start happening that you switch away from the American diet, as you say?
Well, the more you know, the better off you're going to be, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many students have told me over the years that I'm taking my classes or my apprenticeship programs have changed their lives, changed the direction that they were going, changed their diet, changed their mental health, changed their lifestyle. And again, you know, when the body recognizes the good things. And, you know, if you're told you can't ever eat chocolate cake again, what are you going to do?
Crave it.
Yeah. And that's all you want. And then you're going to feel bad because you ate that slice of chocolate cake, right? But so you add these good, healthful things to your body a little bit at a time, and your body's going to make the switch without you really realizing it. That's such a beautiful thing.
That is so great. I think we'll take a quick break right now because there's just so much to uncover here, and it's been a fascinating conversation. So let's take a quick break here. Susie, maybe put on Wild Mountain Time.
I think that's appropriate.
Okay, let's.
We'll be right back. This is 88.5 KRFY, and we're speaking with
Suzanne Tabbert with Cedar Mountain Herbs, and we'll be right back with more.
Here's the Birds with Wild Mountain Time.
Oh, the summertime is coming, and the leaves are sweetly turning. And the wild mountain time looms across the purple heather. Will you go, lassie, go? If you will not go with me, I will surely find another to pull.
That was an appropriate song for the conversation this morning. And thank you, everybody, for joining us on the KRFY Morning Show. This is Garden Life, and we're back here in the studio with Susie Prez as my co-host. I'm Julie Pachinski, and we're here with Suzanne Tabbert from Cedar Mountain Herbs. And we just talked a little tiny bit about bitters, but during our break, we had to talk a little bit more. So as an example, Suzanne, what would be a bitter in your garden that has many uses?
That would be dandelions.
Oh, back to dandelions.
Always back to dandelions. You know, you don't have to have the knowledge of 150,000 plants. You can have 10 plants or 15 plants that work really well for your needs. Dandelions, you're never going to not find them, right? They're everywhere. They're so prolific. And I think that dandelions know where they're supposed to be. You know, and if you have a lot of dandelions in your garden, there's a reason, because it heals the liver, right? And the liver really is the seat of your, well, in Chinese medicine, they say your liver is tied into your mental health, right? And if you have a sluggish liver or a liver that's congested or heat, I'm a person that has liver heat. That means I get triggered really fast into anger. Woohoo! And so for me, bitters, and especially dandelions, dandelions are cooling. It's like they come in and they say, okay, everybody just chill out. It's not that bad. We don't need to go, you know, off the moon or anything like that. And so my mom used to say, you come by that honestly, because my dad's grandmother, who was my great grandma, so she would have my dad pick dandelion greens in the spring, and she would saute them up with onions and garlic that she grew in her garden, and she had in her basement. She had just, you know, so much onions and garlic just hanging from her rafters.
Sure.
Right? And she would fry them all up together with bacon grease. Now, science says that we need an acid to really be able to assimilate and take in the calcium and the iron that are so rich in the dandelion, the greens and the roots and the flowers and the stems, all of it. My great-grandma didn't know that part, but she knew her plants. And she knew that in the spring, the dandelions were up. It's free food, right? Everybody likes a good sale, right? So you can just get that out of your garden. You put it in your salads. And, you know, if you're going to saute it up as a spring green, or, you know, for me, people say, oh, you just use the greens in the spring. Well, why? Because they get more bitter over the year.
Sure.
And that's better for you.
Oh.
Right? And you can make an herbal vinegar out of the dandelion greens and then use that vinegar over your cooked greens. So you've got that acid. You've got all this iron. Calcium is something our nerves need as a food to be able to function properly. And our nerve health has everything to do with our moods. Right. So if our nerves are not healthy, our moods are all over the place. So it's not just about your liver that's ticking you off, you know, it's also your nerves. So we take in that calcium. Calcium is so beautifully calming, right? And dandelions are such a beautiful source of that.
I had a real quick question. Thinking about the dandelions, so there's the leaves, there's the root, there's the flowers. And so greens in the spring is like a tonic.
Mm-hmm.
So all winter long, we're kind of, you know,
sluggish.
Mm-hmm. We're not, well, whatever. Our blood needs a boost in the spring. I mean, you've heard spring tonic.
Yes.
So that's when you use the leaves, because that's the first thing that comes out. But the roots you do differently.
Right. You know, I like to gather the roots in the fall. They're packed full of inulin, and inulin is a polysaccharide that boosts the immune system. It's a fiber and prebiotic. So in our gut, we have these microbes in there, right? And their job is to help us to synthesize GABA, to calm down. It helps us to, you know, our elimination process to work better, to break down the foods we eat, you know, so this inulin is the food for that beneficial bacteria that's in there. And so all we need to do, I like roasting dandelion roots. So you can get them in the spring. However, you know, the plant has been dormant all winter long. It doesn't mean that's dead. It means they're just kind of
starting up.
They hibernate. And so they are taking little bits of nutrition, everything it needs to be able to survive this winters, and then push out the energy to push out the leaves and then the flowers. So and then all year they're building that up again. So I find that you're most nutritious and packed full of nutrients and medicine, and the roots are in the fall. So then I dig them up, or actually I have my husband dig them up for me. Because let me tell you, I have my students do so much of the work, because I like to give I say I'm giving you the experience, because I've had so much experience digging roots and picking and whatnot. Not that I don't ever. but not as much as I used to. And so, you know, I clean the roots, chop up the roots roughly, and then put them in a food processor till they're tiny, tiny, spread them out on a cookie sheet about a half inch thick, and then I pop them into a 250-degree oven for about 4 hours or so, and about halfway I take it out and I just kind of ruffle them up. Right.
Sure.
And
then dry them completely. Then.
Yes. And then you get this beautiful dark roast that contains that beautiful inulin, right? And it contains other nutrients as well. And then, you know, we can make these beautiful teas that can help people get off of coffee. You can start adding some roasted dandelions with your coffee beans and then just gradually increase till you have all dandelion, or even half and half, or, you know, three mm-hmm. quarters, a quarter. And it's so helpful for, you know, we're talking about sluggishness in the winter, and we're just not moving our bodies. We're not out in the garden. We're not digging. We're not weeding, right? And so maybe going to the bathroom is not as easy. And the dandelion roots, especially the roasted, they're bitter, but not as bitter as just plain dried. But they will kick in your peristaltic muscles to just get moving and grooving. And my goodness, no problem.
It sounds like it's very comprehensive. Also, you mentioned that everything we need in this region is here.
Yes.
And so you're really, it's sustainable, medicinal way of looking at life. And I want to go to your school.
You're very welcome to come to my
school. Yeah, so we'll talk about that at the end, all the classes you have coming up. And there is a lot to unpack there, yeah, for sure. But the other thing is that was on your website that I really have to ask you about is ferments, butter and ferments. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a whole nother part of the herbal experience.
Yeah, and that's another way to get the medicine to the people in ways they'll enjoy taking. You know, food. Everybody eats. Food is such an integral part of our daily life. Every once in a while, my husband and I will sit down for dinner and we go, here we are having dinner again. Oh my gosh, you know. And so what are we going to put on the table? And herbal butters are also called compound butters. We put fresh herbs in there, fresh garlic. I love garlic, and people use garlic unknowingly in the wrong way to get that antibacterial effect. When we just cut garlic, we're not really getting as much medicine as if we mash it. In different cells, there's alanase and there's allein. They're in different cells. And so when we mash the garlic with a garlic press, or, you know, with the heel of the knife, it breaks open those cells, and those two compounds come together and they go, oh, hi, let's lock arms. And they then form a sulfur compound called allicin. And that allicin is so beautifully antibacterial, very susceptible to being destroyed with heat. So if we're cooking with garlic, we're getting that beautiful taste. We're getting some heart healthy attributes for sure. But if we want that good antibacterial, we need to mash the garlic. And then, so just as an aside, when people make fire cider, they're using vinegar, but vinegar destroys the allicin over time. Yes. So if you make your fire cider, make sure within a month, 3 weeks to a month, that you're using all the fire cider. The beauty part of that is, you know, you can get all those ingredients. I've got horseradish in my garden right now, and it's a mild enough winter that I could dig some up if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
I just wanted to mention fire cider. It's something I just heard about, and someone gave me a jar of it. So you're saying use it up fairly soon.
Very soon, yeah. So you'll still get the healthful things that the ginger and the cayenne pepper, whatever hot pepper, jalapeno maybe, you'll still get that, but you're not going to get that specific allicin, the mm-hmm. antibacterial action from the garlic.
From the garlic.
Right, and the onions as well.
She also put echinacea and astragalus in it.
Oh, my goodness. I bet that tastes wonderful.
Yeah, it was very potent, and it wipes things out like that.
Yes,
so
yeah.
It's all over the internet, too, by the way.
Oh, yes, gosh, yeah. It is. And so what it comes down to is we don't let it sit on our shelf for 6 months, because it's not going to be as effective. But these compound butters, you can mash that garlic and you have some softened butter and mix that all together. Put in a little parsley if you want, because, you know, garlic. Within just a few minutes, that allicin, so fragrant, will start coming out of your pores, out of your feet, out of your armpits, out of your mouth, you know, and people go, whoa. You know, so you add a little parsley and make sure everybody else eats it, because then it cancels it out. But you're going to get that wonderful antibacterial action just from something you're slathering on a piece of toast.
Wow. Sure.
Or putting it on your potato.
And we are here
at 88.5 KRFY. Thank you for joining us for this fascinating conversation with Suzanne. We're talking everything herbs and bitters and food, and it's been a great conversation this morning. But the other thing that you have on your website are medicinal honeys.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You did mention that about getting people's sweet tooth engaged, but... Right. Medicinal honeys
that actually work. You know, I talked about the willow earlier. We can make a honey out of willow by stripping the bark, cutting it as small as possible, filling a jar, and then covering it with good local honey. That's another part of being a bioregional herbalist or bioregional herbalism that anybody can really do, is using not just the local herbs, but the local menstruum, the local honeys, the products that are made here, because those bees, you know, they're sipping on the nectar of the beautiful flowers that grow here, and that medicine literally goes into the honey.
That's right.
Yeah, and so I love making the willow honey. It has this bittersweet taste. You're still getting the bitters. You're getting that bitter profile, but you're kind of literally sugarcoating it for those people who aren't ready for the full-on, you know, willow tea yet, because that's super bitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and anything that's edible can be made into a honey. So the rest of the directions is, you know, you got your chopped up plants in the jar, you fill the jar all the way up with honey, and it takes some time to drizzle down, so, you know, you're going to keep adding. Put on the lid, let it hang out on a plate on your counter for about 4 weeks, and then you're going to strain it out.
So that's the ferment.
That is part. An herbal. Well,
is it considered fermenting?
No. Although it will, if the plant was a very moist plant and it starts fermenting on its own.
But covered in the honey.
Covered in the honey. It shouldn't. And if it does, then there's actually something going on there. That maybe, you know, there's some mold action as well that we have to look forward.
So that's not considered fermenting.
No, fermenting is usually using a salt, brine, or adding some whey to the veggies or the herbs to create, and then we keep it on a table for a period of time, usually, you know, depending on what it is. Like, I make a fermented garlic, I ferment the whole garlic, and I usually leave that on my counter for about a week to 10 days with 5% salt brine, and I have a weight on top because we want to make sure all the plant material is underneath the water, and then this beautiful fermentation starts happening, and then whatever then has been fermented, whether, you know, it could be salsa, it could be the ingredients that you make your fire cider with, you can turn that into a ferment, and the fermentation it's another food for our gut bacteria. So as we're eating fermented foods, our moods are lifting. We have better mental health, right? But the caveat with that is if we eat too many fermented foods at a time, it could kick in a histamine reaction in the body and create then inflammation. So I always tell people, fermented foods are a condiment, not a meal, right? And I've seen some of my students bring a big thing of kombucha and drink the whole thing. And then they complain, I keep drinking this kombucha and I'm not feeling any better. What's happening? And I said, well, how about if you just have 1 or 2 ounces a day? I learned how to make kombucha from an elderly woman in the Seattle area like 1400 years ago. and she was this gal who you had to know somebody to be introduced to her. And I got to go into her house and she showed me how to do it and then said, just 1 or 2 ounces a day. That's all you need anymore. And it can make you sick.
Oh, I found that to be true, actually.
It always herbs are very powerful. People sometimes don't understand that it can be too much as well as not enough when it comes to herbs.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We're in this supersize me culture, or if a little bit is good, then a lot's going to be better. But when it comes to herbs, that's not true.
That's right.
We have a lot to unfold here, as you say, Julie. But one of the things, just to mention one last thing, is 75 million Americans have problems sleeping. They take a ton of pharmaceuticals that actually can make it worse, doesn't work. And there are herbal remedies for that. I know lemon balm is one of them. But so is that part of your school, really, to look at herbs that help with sleep?
Yeah, I talk about herbs that do just about everything. You know, every body system I teach about what can be helpful. And to me, it's not just the herbs, it's lifestyle as well. And so when it comes to sleep, we've got to talk about sleep hygiene. And what does that mean? You know, what are your sheets? Are your sheets not breathable, so you're too hot and you can't sleep because it's too hot? Are you looking at tech, you know, your devices, and that can ruin your sleep cycle, right?
The blue light, right?
Mm-hmm. Are we drinking alcohol right before bed? Because that can disrupt the sleep cycle as well. So this sleep hygiene could mean wearing blue blocking glasses, or I have a pair of orange glasses that I wear at night if I'm on my phone, and it doesn't interrupt my sleep cycle. That doesn't mean I need to be laying in bed looking at my phone either, but you know, the bedroom is mostly for sleeping.
Yes.
You know, and so we like to keep it to that. And then there are herbs. You mentioned, Susie, the lemon balm. And there was a herbalist way, way, way back, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, called Culpepper. And he says that lemon balm makes you merry. And, you know, one thing that lemon balm does, if somebody has hyperthyroid, it can help to heal that, help to slow that down. One of the symptoms of hyperthyroid is anxiety and insomnia. So if we take the lemon balm regularly, not just before we go to bed, but maybe lemon balm tea during the day, or I like to make a lemon balm tincture to take, it can help to heal the reason why we're not sleeping. And then sleep will then come naturally as well.
A comprehensive look.
Yes.
The elements of our human body and our whatever we're dealing with.
Environment.
Yes. Yes.
Well, this is a perfect opportunity to go into the classes that you have coming up, because I believe you have a sleep.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's an online class every first and third Fridays of the month, November through March. I have a business partner, a fellow instructor in the Seattle area, Heather Bruno, and we teach those online classes together. And we have one coming up soon on sleep. And they're just 5:30 to 6:30, very easy, and packed full of lots and lots of information.
Give us your web information so people can look up your classes and learn more about you.
CedarMountainHerbs.com. Herbs is plural.
That's right.
Or you can just ask Uncle Google to show you where the Cedar Mountain Herb School is, and then it'll pop right up.
So you've written a couple of books as well. Can you introduce your books to us too?
Yes. I have one called Wild and Beautiful, an herbal encyclopedia for naturally healthy skin. And then the other one is Quest for Calm, Using Herbs and Lifestyle Changes to Create Resilient Emotional Health. I wrote this Quest for Calm because I have issues with anxiety myself. And so you know, I like to teach what I know about, and I know about anxiety, you know, and what, and anxiety is really part of the human culture. And since the pandemic, it really has ratcheted up a lot of mental health issues in people, and anxiety, constant anxiety is one of them. And anxiety, constant stress, precursor to chronic inflammation, and then we go into all the diseases, right? And so I talk about what the kind of the mechanics of anxiety, what happens in the body when we get anxious or we have a stress response. And then I go into the herbs, 11 herbs. I talk about, I give recipes. I talk about the medicine they bring. I tell you how to use the plants that you can get in the wild and the ones that you can use in the garden. And then the last section of the book is lifestyle. So we'll talk about chiropractic care, yoga, meditation, breath work, letting things go.
Singing.
Music.
Yeah. And then the other one, my wild and beautiful book, is all about skincare. So the first section is all about skincare. And I talk about in the introduction, looking to my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, what did they use? You know, why? They were just beautiful, beautiful women, but they were beautiful women inside and out. So I do talk about the beauty that's within you and bringing it out. And then there's 161 skincare recipes in there.
Wow.
Well, I did farmers markets and street fairs for 27 years.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. My goodness.
Learned a
yes.
lot.
Yeah. And, you know, I would have all these products and one day I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I was getting older and that just setting up the booth and all of the things. And I made my own products and a lot of them were from wildcrafted herbs. I went 9 years without a vacation because I was doing it all.
Working.
Oh,
working.
My gosh, doing it all. And so one day I said, I'm going to let it go. And I just sent out a prayer. How, you know, I want to take this leap of faith that just teaching will support me. And oh, my goodness, the prayer was answered. And I taught, this was, six, seven years ago. No. Well, just a few years ago, I taught a botanical skincare class, which I do every year, and I wrote a handout for it, and it was 18 pages long. And I said, wait a minute, this is a book. And it took me about a month to read the book, and I self-published it. And then Ogden Publishing contacted me and said, we want to publish your book. And I said, hallelujah, because, you know, self-publishing is not the easiest thing.
No.
With all the marketing and everything. And so they made the book nice and pretty. And
it is a pretty book. Very
thank
pretty.
You. Uh-huh. Thank you. And you know, that. So I have so many books in me, and I'm waiting to be able to sit down and write some more.
Oh my gosh, we are, I believe, running out of time, but I can't end without our standard question is, what in your garden brings you joy? But also for you, what is it you think about herbs that make herbalists so passionate?
I think it's partly being able to share something tangible with another human being and watching them grow and blossom and be healed on their own, too. I like to say that I just give people the tools to heal themselves, right? And so when I take people out in the garden and I look at their faces, or I take people up in the mountains and I just watch this beauty, this radiance that comes out of them, I'm just getting chills talking about it. You know, it's such a beauty part to me that can't, you know, money, yes, people pay for my classes, but that has nothing on watching how people's lives are changed, and that I get to be a part of that. I never had kids, right? So I don't pass things down. I pass things over,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I hear my students saying, I just taught a class and I had people come and it was so much fun. Thank you so much. And to me, it's like, I birthed another herbalist. That's so beautiful. And my Aunt Mary, who taught me, you know, who started my track on this, she would always talk about the beauty part of life. And so that to me is the beauty part of life, is to be able to share what I know. You know, and then my grandma would always say, you can't give to one and not the other. And So for me, what is my favorite plant in the garden? All of them. I love them all the same. And I'm always getting more. And my husband will say to me, do you need more plants? And he's a builder. And I go, do you need more tools? Yes. What is that question? Yeah, I want more plants. And I want to, you know, I want to share as much as I possibly can with others.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us this morning. This has been a terrific conversation. I can't thank you enough, Suzanne.
My goodness.
Talbert with Cedar Mountain Herbs. Check it out. Go online and look at her website and see all the things she offers, classes and apprenticeships. I mean, it's the full
enchilada.
Yeah. Monty, I was going to say, but that probably wasn't right.
Enchilada.
And you're listening to KRFY 88.5. I'm Julie Prochinski here with Susie Prez. We're going to have a quick song and come back in a little bit with what's happening at our station and in our town. So what do we have up next, Susie?
Well, I just want to thank Suzanne Talbert from Cedar Mountain Herbs again. I agree with you, Julie. This was a great conversation this morning. And if you didn't hear all of the interview and this great information, you can go to our website. Did you already say this?
No, I didn't.
KRFY.org, and there will be a podcast. We recorded this interview, so
check that out. Yeah. That's a good way to listen if you missed any of it or want to hear it again.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Thank you.
We hope to see you again. And we're going to hear Jesse Colin Young, Fight For It.
Fight For It.
The whole song this time.
Okay.
I think it's going to play. We'll see.